I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Democrats in Olympia are poised to pass an unconstitutional income tax, and it's not the only thing they're doing that's blatantly unconstitutional. We'll also discuss the bill that is very soon to become law that will put new restrictions on elected sheriffs and allow unelected bureaucrats to remove them from office. Also, an investigation reveals that Washington State's public schools have a serious predator problem. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Sorry to surprise you with an hour early today. Don't panic. I know you guys don't like change. I don't like change either. But we are going to be rushing down to federal court right after we wrap up today. As you know, I have this ongoing press pass battle with the state of Washington. Not only me, Jonathan Cho, Ari Hoffman, we were all denied press passes earlier this session by Democrats in the Washington State House of Representatives. With help from the Citizen Action Defense Fund, we promptly sued the state of Washington as well as the Capitol Correspondents Association in an attempt to get those press passes relinquished. And so we're going to be in federal court at 1:30 this afternoon in Tacoma. And it's been interesting to watch this all play out. I mean, there's some bigger picture items here, right? I mean, this is a free press fight. And I think it's a fight that really a lot of states across the nation are going to have to contend with. And the White House is kind of ahead of its time, frankly, because it's allowed some of these independent journalists to have a seat at the table, so to speak. Now, I don't like some of the other things the White House has done as it pertains to legacy media. To me, it's about addition, not subtraction. I'm not trying to replace legacy reporters. I don't need to. They're replacing themselves because they're becoming completely irrelevant. But more voices are better. And there's a whole swath of the population, as I've argued many times, that is not well served by legacy news. You know, there's this whole argument that I'm not a journalist, and I've said I'm not a journalist. But that doesn't mean I'm not a member of the press. I always want to differentiate between a journalist, a reporter, a political commentator, so you, the viewer, the listener, the news consumer, know what you're getting. And I argue it's far better to have someone who says, this is what my bias is, now let me tell you about the news, than have somebody who pretends, I don't have a bias at all, now let me tell you about the news. And then they do it in a very biased fashion. And so, you know, the First Amendment and freedom of the press in this country, it was built for people who need protection from the government. And I would argue entities like the Seattle Times and King Five, who just toe the party line, the party in power in Olympia, they don't really need protection because they're doing exactly what the people in power want them to be doing. So the free press was meant for people like me, for people like Jonathan Cho, for people like Ari Hoffman, and that is very much going to be tested in federal court today. So it was interesting over the weekend to watch the filings go back and forth, and our attorney with Citizen Action Defense Fund keeping us up to date. The argument from the state of Washington is pretty clear, and it's a horrible one. This is viewpoint discrimination. They believe that since I have an opinion, and I have expressed those opinions publicly, that I should be denied a press pass. Quite literally, in their filing with the court ahead of the hearing today, they have a picture of me on the steps of the state capitol, standing next to teen girls, athletes, with Let's Go Washington, arguing that boys shouldn't be allowed in girls' sports. It says, Cruz is involved with Let's Go Washington. The following screenshot from an Undivided YouTube video shows Cruz speaking in support of the organization's initiatives on the steps of the legislative building. She also spoke at a Let's Go Washington rally in November of 2025. Yeah, I spoke at far more Let's Go Washington events than just that one, and I've never been paid a dime. For the record, have never been paid a dime to speak at Let's Go Washington events. The only income that I have is income from Undivided. I get paid to speak at certain events that are not, I don't charge nonprofits, not-for-profits to speak or charities to speak. But yeah, part of my income is also if people want me to spend some of my time coming to speak to a for-profit entity, then yeah, I charge them a speaking fee, but I've never charged Let's Go Washington anything. But they basically argue, and they make the same argument for Jonathan Cho, oh, he works for a think tank, he's not a journalist. They make the same argument for Ari Hoffman, oh, he's taken political stances. Well, that doesn't negate the fact that we're still members of the press. just like I would argue the Seattle Times editorial board should be granted press passes. I mean, I don't know how many times ad nauseum I have to reiterate that whether you're a podcaster or a YouTuber, if you're engaged in the dissemination of information to an audience, the government has no right to tell you that you're not a member of the press. And so in this filing with federal court, the state of Washington tells on itself. I mean, it really does. It tells on itself that this is about viewpoint discrimination. They don't like that I have a viewpoint that I express publicly, and so they want to discriminate against me when it comes to the dissemination of press passes. And they can't do that. And I thought that CATF's response to that filing was brilliant, because they basically said, we don't need to say much because the state of Washington just made our case for us. They said, in part, defendants' opposition confirms the central constitutional problem. The state of Washington has created a press credentialing regime that allows government officials working with a private association to decide which journalists are sufficiently journalistic to access the legislature's press pass. This excludes plaintiffs not because of any neutral access limitation, but because of their perceived advocacy and political viewpoints. The First Amendment does not permit the government to decide that certain journalists are too opinionated, too critical, or too politically active to qualify as a member of the press. Yet that is precisely what defendants admit that they have done. Now, this particular, I actually don't know the judge that we have today, and I don't think it matters. I know that he was a Biden choice and a Inslee appointee. I don't think it matters, because this is a very basic constitutional issue. There's a ton of case law in this regard. So a couple important things I want to point out. In the filing from the state of Washington, and also they've hired a pricey Seattle law firm, rather than have the attorney general's office do the dirty work here in trying to crush the First Amendment, they're busy crushing other constitutional amendments. They've hired a pricey Seattle law firm to file, and they were just filing all sorts of things over the weekend. So God only knows how much of your money they're spending to keep three members of the media they don't like from having press credentials during a 2-month long session. So that's going on. But there's a couple things I just want to point out here. In the actual filing, they have a screenshot of a post of mine that where I say I'm not a journalist because I'm a political commentator. But I don't know if they're being intentionally obtuse. There are many different types of members of the media and press. Journalist is one of those types, but I'm a reporter and political commentator, and I am covered by the free press aspect of the First Amendment. So it's just very odd, their lack of understanding, or maybe they're just, again, being obtuse for what free press entails and who the press is. It's actually very responsible of me to make the differentiation that I'm not an unbiased journalist. I'm a political commentator and a reporter with a very obvious bias, right? So I actually think that's quite responsible. The other thing is here is the clock is ticking. So the hearing today isn't on the case as a whole. The hearing today is seeking emergency relief. So we want the judge today to, on a temporary basis, force Washington State Democrats to give us a press pass for the remainder of the session. And this is very important because today, as we're going to discuss next, Democrats are very likely to bring to the floor of the House of Representatives their income tax proposal that has been altered over the weekend. Again, we'll get to that in a moment. But if the judge grants us emergency relief, I will immediately go to Olympia and go on the floor of the House where the press is supposed to be able to sit, and I will cover the vote and the debate on the income tax. We've got 4 days left on the session. It ends on Thursday. And so inarguably, when you look at the issue of emergency relief, you look at what harm would be caused and is it irreparable to not issue an emergency injunction and force the state to give the press passes? And I would argue, of course it is, because once these 4 days are done, the session is over. It's not like if we win our case in 3 months, we can go back and say, all right, can we go back and redo the debate and the vote on the House floor on the income tax proposal or whatever other crazy bill that they're putting forth? So it's obvious that we need emergency relief. It's going to be 4 days long. Let's all grow up and allow us our press passes for the last 4 days of the session while this case moves forward so we can cover some of these critical votes. And then it's also very obvious to me the Constitution. I mean, I would be shocked. Now I'm saying that and I should knock on wood. It would be stunning if a federal judge decides in this moment not to grant us emergency relief and to side with the state in saying that we can't have press passes because we express political opinions. That would be absolutely insane. I need you to understand that. And then it would all be done with your money, which is even more insane. But as I said, I will immediately take that judge's ruling, head down to Olympia, print that sucker off if I have to, and present it to the security at the entry to the House floor, because we believe that possibly tonight, might go into Tuesday morning, but very likely tonight, Democrats are going to force a vote on the floor over their latest iteration of the income tax. So where were we last week when we ended the show? Well, last week, Bob was like, oh, I don't know, maybe we won't pass the income tax this session. Who knows? You know, it's not quite where I want it to be yet. And what did I say at the time? BS. That is such BS. He was always going to pass it. That was always the plan. He just wanted to look like he was playing hardball to get more tax breaks for the little guy. They're always going to pass it. And so then I think it was Friday, he came out and said, oh, Democrats have come up with a new version of the income tax proposal, and this is a version I will sign. So Washington State is going to have an income tax. This is unavoidable at this point. Governor Ferguson, in response to the latest version that House Democrats put forth to try to earn his approval, said, I've said from the beginning of the discussion around the millionaires tax, any bill I sign must send a significant percentage of that revenue back to Washington families and small business owners. The latest amendments to the bill achieve these critical goals and will help make our state more affordable. The millionaire's tax will expand the working families tax credit, provide tax relief to nearly 140,000 small businesses, exempt diapers, hygiene products, and over-the-counter medications from sales tax, invest significant funding into childcare and early learning, provide free school lunch and breakfast for all Washington students. He said, I strongly encourage the legislature to pass this bill in its current form. It represents a historic step forward in rebalancing our unfair system and making life more affordable for Washington families and small business owners. BS, 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 BS. You guys, virtually nothing has changed about the proposal. Like, nothing significant. And that tells you all you need to know. He wanted to be seen as playing hardball, just like he did last year when he said, I'm not signing these taxes, and then signed the largest tax increase in state history into law. I don't know why people are still fooled by this. Just a couple points I want to talk about in what he says. So he said, you know, a significant, I actually think his wording a couple weeks ago was that most of the taxes brought in through this income tax on millionaires should be used to provide tax relief. Most of it is not being used to provide tax relief. In fact, I think it's around 25% of the money they bring in or expect to bring in through this income tax will go back to lowering taxes or providing tax credits for families. So I wouldn't call that, what is his word, a significant percentage. 25%, I don't think that's a significant percentage. He says, provide tax relief to nearly 140,000 small businesses. Based on the stipulations, I would be one of those businesses. If the income tax on millionaires passes, then my B&O tax would go down in the state of Washington. Guess what? I still don't support the income tax because it is going to have a net disastrous impact on our economy that we will never recover from. And they have a certain amount of money they think it's going to bring in. It's not going to bring in anywhere near that because the millionaires are going to flee. And then all of us, then they'll come back and they'll say, oh, well, you know, we tried to give a tax break to businesses, but we got to come back and tax you again because, you know, the millionaires left. So it's just stupid to think that this is going to have a positive impact on any business in the long term. When he says it's going to exempt diapers, hygiene products, blah, blah, blah. Republicans have tried to do that for several years in a row and Democrats rejected it. And so now Bob's going to take a victory lap around something that Republicans tried to do twice this session, build that exact thing into this bill via amendments, and Democrats rejected it. So I'm not giving anyone credit, like, for doing something that has been tried and that they rejected, and now they want to act like they're the good guys. And then this one, this bothers me. His whole thing is, oh my gosh, this tax on millionaires is going to provide free school lunch and breakfast for all Washingtonians. First of all, it's not free. It's not free. Somebody has to pay for it. Okay. And so you're going to tax the rich to pay for this, right? So let's stop calling it free. But also, am I the only, I am not opposed necessarily to the idea of kids not having to pay extra, you know, and I was one of those kids who, you know, got up to the little beep beep thing and they were like, sorry, you have no money. And they took my hot lunch away and gave me a sack lunch for the day. That's embarrassing. No kid should ever have to go through that, right? Or be the kid with the free lunch or whatever. We spend $20,000 a year per pupil. What is the latest number? $19,341 a year per pupil. That's twice what we were spending 10 years ago. You're telling me that $15 of that per day can't go to cover the cost of breakfast and lunch? What the hell are you doing with those $20,000 that you can't use? And I think $15 is being generous, frankly. Let's call it 10, that you can't pay for breakfast and lunch for those kids. That's my big issue. We don't need more taxes to cover the cost of breakfast and lunch. No, you spend $20,000 per student. Use some of that money to make sure that they're fed. And there's also this issue of if you're all like, let's tax the rich. If we're going to make parents pay for something on top of the property taxes and the money they're already paying to go towards their child's education, I'm pretty sure parents that are making millions of dollars a year don't need free lunch for their kids. Free, quote unquote. But if you're going to do it, I don't disagree with doing it for everybody. But we spend $20,000 per year. We should be able to cover the cost of breakfast and a measly lunch for kids with that money. But no, you're giving it to your buddies with the Washington Education Association, using that money to pad their pockets and to hire assistant superintendent after assistant superintendent after assistant superintendent. Then you're like, oh my God, the kids, they can't afford food. We can't afford to give kids free food. It's just so indicative of the progressive mindset and the Democratic mindset. It's like, oh, we can't, you know, oh, why make hard decisions? Let's just tax more and then we'll pay for everything that we want. Also, Nicole thought what this was interesting because she says, I swear, was it like your cousin or something's kid?
It was just a friend's kid.
And she was saying, oh, well, my kids already get the free.
Yeah, she was actually complaining because her kid would not eat at home, would go to school and get crap that they give her at home and because it's free.
And it was so like, quote unquote, free. And your friend is not hurting for money at all, like absolutely doesn't need it. No. And so Nicole reached out to the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction this morning and said, you know, Bob's bragging that all these kids are going to get free breakfast and lunch, but isn't this by and large already happening? And they said, yeah, OSPI basically undermined this whole talking point from the governor. Their spokesperson told us, yes, many schools already offer free school meals to all students, both through a federally funded program called Community Eligibility Program, CEP, and through a state funded program that is an expansion of CEP called Meals for Kids. Between these universal meals, schools and students in non-universal meals schools that are eligible for free and reduced price meals due to their family income, about 3/4 of Washington students receive free meals at school.
And you the rest guys, probably don't eat it.
OSPI. 75% of kids are already getting this, thanks to federal dollars and state dollars that are already going to this. And Bob, that was like his primary. He sent out multiple posts about this new income tax proposal. That was the primary thing he was celebrating. That, oh, this will make sure all kids go to school and eat for free. Again, not free, but 75% of them already do. And yeah, I bet you 25%. They bring lunch from home. That was the cool thing to do when I was a kid. Yeah, they're bringing lunch from home with their sweet, you know, Jell-O pack and whatever the kids like these days. It was a Capri Sun and then a Lunchable.
And I know you were complaining, you know, nobody wants to go up and show that they get free lunches or whatever, but life's rough, number one.
I understand.
Number two, then make it a little more discreet, but you don't,
right.
We do not need to be paying for everyone's lunch. This is absolutely ridiculous.
We're already paying for everyone's lunch. $20,000 per pupil. We can pay for their lunch. So that is not a reason to tax our economy into oblivion. That is not a justification to pass an unconstitutional income tax that will destroy our state's economy. And there are still people hoping in the final days here, final 4 days, that Bob Ferguson and the Democrats will come to their senses. That is not going to happen. But why not try? So there are some tech leaders who have sent a letter to legislators. Our friend Ori Hoffman got a hold of it. It said, and this is from a few people, including a former VP of AI at Microsoft, a general partner at Founders Co-op, president and CTO of Venice AI, former vice president of Microsoft, Brian Hall, and a startup angel investor. They say, legislators, the decision you make in these final days of a short session could determine the direction of the state's job creation, economic growth, and social policy for decades. Voting for a state income tax would set Washington's economic growth back decades, making it virtually impossible to compete with California, even where the tech ecosystem is far stronger, and low tax states like Texas. Washington State became a world leader in technology and innovation due in part to the welcoming climate for innovators. As a result, we are now home to some of the most innovative people from across the planet. People from across the globe have enriched our innovative economy and community because our business climate welcomed companies that made our state a magnet for entrepreneurs. That welcoming innovative spirit is seriously threatened by the income tax proposal and the trend over the past decade that tells innovators and risk takers that they are unwelcome. And I'll say this, even if, let's just say, Bob Ferguson read that letter and he's like, oh, they're right, which isn't going to happen. Damage is done. I hate to say that. And I do want the income tax stopped. If there was some miracle on earth that could happen in the next 4 days to stop this, or, you know, maybe the state Supreme Court doesn't rule with Democrats, or voters are able to overturn it on an initiative, by all means, that would make me overjoyed. But from a tech, AI, startup, entrepreneur perspective, the damage is done. The damage is done because this has been 10 years in the making, a 10-year trend of high taxes, bad business policies. And as I've said a million times, once you make that decision that this isn't a friendly place for me to grow my business, you're never going to go back. So Starbucks moving to Tennessee, Amazon downsizing its footprint in Seattle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Once you make that decision, you're making a long-term decision. And if you can't trust that the state is going to be a stable environment for your business, you're not going to start it here. And you're not going to keep it here. And you're certainly not going to bring it back. So the damage is done. Let's be clear about that. We could have, even if we have a sane governor in 2 years or in 6 years or whatever it is, I don't even know that they could undo the damage that has been done. It will take decades to try to restore our reputation as a place for business. Now, I saw this great post that makes such a good point, and I got to bookmark it because it'll become very relevant 3, 4, or 5 years from now. It's from a guy named Joe Wall, and he's a corporate tax attorney. He has a blog about corporate finance and Washington tax policy. So he's talking about the income tax on quote-unquote millionaires and how unpredictable of a revenue stream this is for a state that has spent itself into record deficits. He says $3.4 billion a year, riding on 16,000 households. That's what Senate Bill 6346 asks us to bet on. 0.5% of Washington families funding a massive new reoccurring spending commitment. High-income earners are the most mobile taxpayers in the country. They have choices. They have accountants. They have Zillow. When they leave, and some will, that $3.4 billion doesn't quietly shrink. The state's spending it funds doesn't go away. Washington would be building its budget on the narrowest, most volatile tax base possible. That's not a revenue strategy. That's a cliff. I could not say it better. Very well said. And this is when I less artfully explain that this is all going to come back on you and me and the working class. That's what I mean. It's whenever you tax big business or single someone out for taxation, Seattle's dealing with this in a smaller regard with its payroll tax. So this was its jumpstart tax, rather. This was a tax on high earners. So it was a tax on the companies that pay people too much, basically. And what happened? I mean, Amazon moved 10,000 jobs overnight, and you've seen the expected revenue from the jumpstart tax shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink. And then Seattle's back in a budget crisis all over again. So that's what Joe is very, very explaining very well here, is that this is the worst possible, most volatile tax base you could bet our budget on. And it's going to be a disaster. Give it 3, 4, 5 years when they start collecting revenues and it becomes apparent that the people they plan to tax are no longer living here. So Democrats are doing that unconstitutional little bit of work this week. Hopefully I can be down there to cover it. And then they're also attacking the will of voters. I mean, they're literally, I need to start counting the constitutional amendments that they're actively undermining. So Senate Bill 5974 is something that we've discussed on this show. And this is the bill that would put new restrictions on people who are running for sheriff. So basically, you'd have to have a certain amount of experience in law enforcement before you run for sheriff. You have to pass polygraphs and all these things before you run for sheriff, new age requirements, etc. But then the real kicker is it hands control over the fate of an elected sheriff over to an unelected board of bureaucrats at the Washington State Criminal Justice Training Center. And it would basically say if they want to strip that sheriff of his law enforcement certification because of, I don't know, maybe they don't like something he says. Oh, I don't like what you tweeted. We're going to strip you of your law enforcement certification. And then, therefore, you can no longer be the elected sheriff. And this is, and those unelected bureaucrats are appointed by Democrats. So this is terrifying stuff. And there's a big belief that there's a few sheriffs they have in mind. For instance, when Adam Fortney was the sheriff in Snohomish County, I think they started talk of this for him. they didn't like him. They didn't like that he was law and order, Constitution first. So, I mean, if he ends up running for office again, which I hope he does, I think that this is a law that they would try to use to remove him from office. And then, of course, Pierce County Sheriff Keith Swank is another one who has tweeted some controversial things. And so I really believe that he will probably be the first victim of their efforts if this withstands a lawsuit, which I don't think that it will. I think it's unconstitutional, that this would be their first victim would be Keith Swank. Keith Swank spoke to the Center Square in reaction to this bill now passing both the House and the Senate.
This is a weapon used by the Democrats to be able to control the sheriffs. Democrats control, as you know, the state House, the state Senate. Every statewide elected official is a Democrat. They control every single thing here in the state except for sheriffs. And now with the passage of this bill, they believe they'll be able to control sheriffs. They'll be able to decertify them, remove them from office, appoint the people they want to have in those positions, and then they have complete control over everybody.
100%. You know, they already have control over police chiefs because most of the major cities are run by Democrats and police chiefs are appointed by mayors. And so they just end up putting puppets in there. But elected sheriffs, they can't be puppets of the establishment. Well, under this, will they turn into puppets? Will they say, gosh, in order to keep my law enforcement certification and keep my job, now I have to please this unelected board of bureaucrats appointed by Democrats, and so I better not step out of line. I better not be out there saying I won't enforce mask mandates and I won't enforce unconstitutional gun laws or whatever it is. I mean, I think that Keith Swank has drawn ire for comments about should transgender people be able to own firearms, which I don't like that comment either, but he has a right to say it. He didn't lose his First Amendment rights just because he won an election. And I really liked what Sheriff Sanders down in Thurston County had to say about this. He said on the bill, he said, the language has language within it that will likely disqualify my current opponent from appearing on the ballot for sheriff. The new standards require 5 years of continuous full-time law enforcement experience with enforcement responsibilities. My opponent will be approximately 3 months short of that new minimum standard. It's always the right time to support the integrity of our democracy, even when it means you could lose your own elected status in the process of a free and fair election. My opponent should have the opportunity to appear on the ballot, and the voters of Thurston County should retain their sovereignty to choose who is best fit to lead. I'm asking Governor Bob Ferguson to please side with voters, uphold our long-established democratic process, and allow my opponent to appear on the ballot. All of this can be achieved with a veto of this bill when it reaches his desk. Now, I find it very hard to believe that Governor Bob Ferguson will veto this bill, but I admire Sheriff Sanders for saying that. Like, you pass this bill, all of a sudden my opponent, I don't have an opponent. And all of a sudden, this person who's running a race because he's 3 months short of this new requirement they've passed for continuous law enforcement experience, all of a sudden he can't run? I mean, or God forbid, this is messy. We've got these elections going on right now. Let's say there's some sort of legal challenge, and so the law is put on hold, and let's say his opponent beats him, and then they lose in court. Who's the freaking sheriff then? I mean, that's absolutely crazy that this is all happening. Now, Representative Matt Marshall, he represents the 2nd District. He's a Republican from Eatonville. He said something that was a little controversial, but I understand exactly what he's trying to articulate.
This is causing a lot of frustration amongst the sheriffs, and it's culminated with my sheriff going viral after some of his testimony on this very bill right here. While I'm not going to speak to whether or not it was justified, there was a lot of frustration about this branch unilaterally changing the criteria for him to remain in his office. Now, I think that his frustration could be summed up with a great quote by Marvin Heemeyer, and it's that I was always reasonable until I had to be unreasonable. Sometimes reasonable men must do unreasonable things. Let's not provoke any of our sheriffs. Let's just ensure that this amendment is adopted and the ones that were elected before this change in law are protected in their constitutional office. So please vote yes.
And you heard Democrats in the background, a little bit of a kerfuffle when he said that, because he's basically suggesting, like, you know, this might force some of these sheriffs to do something unreasonable. And Sheriff Keith Swank was accused of hinting at a possible violent revolt when he testified about this bill or against this bill during one of the committee hearings, when he said, if you try to remove me from office, thousands of citizens will surround the county building and they won't let it happen. But here's the thing is, like, are we not getting into, and I'm going to be accused of now stoking a rebellion, are we not getting into the type of tyranny that birthed our nation here. I mean, they're passing an unconstitutional income tax. Even one of the Democrats who voted for it admits it's unconstitutional. Like, what's the point? Just throw away our constitution. Rip up our state constitution then. Because so many things they're doing. The Attorney General bill that I talked about last week absolutely, I think, violates people's constitutional right, expands these powers for the Attorney General to investigate anyone he sees fit, really for any reason. Just one of the many ways that they're undermining our rights in the Constitution and protections that are supposed to be in place for us as law-abiding citizens. And so at what point, honestly, do you revolt? I mean, it's celebrated that Americans did it, you know, to revolt from the monarchy over taxes. And now it's like, I'm not saying do that, but I'm not saying that there won't come a time when it's appropriate. If you have people who have become essentially dictators and who are undermining your rights in the Constitution, I don't know that it becomes unreasonable to push back against that tyranny. It wasn't unreasonable for the founders of this country. I don't think we're at that point yet, but I think that's what Matt Marshall is trying to articulate there. Look at all the ways. I mean, gosh, we could sit here for a whole hour and talk about the ways that they're undermining and attacking our democracy, trying to undermine the initiative process. They've taken away our right to referendum. They're trying to remove duly elected sheriffs. They're trying to expand the power of unelected bureaucrats. It's insane stuff. So at what point do reasonable people start to do unreasonable things? All right, coming up next, this probably won't surprise you, but it's always good to put the numbers to it. Our public school system has a serious predator problem. We'll get to the numbers, a good investigative report from Investigate West coming up next. First, if you are thinking about selling your home, I know it can always be a weird time, like the market has kind of been a little groggy. And so you might think, gosh, is this the best time of year to sell my home, given where the market is at and the rates are at? Reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, and he can give you good advice on the state of the market. We spoke to one of Wes's clients, one of our wonderful Undivided viewers, Preston, who says that selling with Wes worked out way better than he thought it would. He even made a bet against Wes getting him over asking price.
We had tons of showings. We had 3 offers in one day. So kind of got a little bit of a bidding war. One came over asking, went with that one. I actually had said that I'm kind of a cheapskate, so I've never been a member. So I said if Wes gets me over asking, I'll become a member. So I became a member.
Oh, because Wes got you over asking? Wow. Yes, wow. So we had to become a member of Undivided. You have to love that. Win for me, win for Wes. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, 160 teachers disciplined for sexual misconduct since 2015 in our public school system. So we'll get to the numbers, but I mean, this isn't a surprise. Just in the last week, there's been 2 stories like this. Just in the last couple days. Edmonds, Washington paraeducator accused of raping a child student for 5 years. That story from Fox 13. From Como News, Sky Comish, K-12 staff member booked on investigation of rape of a child. That was a horrible, disgusting one that was in the headlines. And so we know this stuff is happening. And I think we also suspect that a lot of it is happening without the knowledge of parents or without parents being informed. It's one of the reasons why Let's Go Washington is running the initiative to restore parental rights in education, so parents aren't just totally blocked out of what's happening at public schools. Investigate West has an article out that talks about this whole issue. Washington agency disciplined 160 teachers for sexual misconduct since 2015. Many cases are shielded from the public. An Investigate West analysis of the state's educator misconduct database shows gaps allowing teachers to escape scrutiny. And it gets into some of the examples of these really just horrendous cases involving teacher sexual misconduct. But as far as the 160 misconduct cases since 2015, Investigate West says that's likely an undercount. Many teachers who were found to have committed sexual misconduct weren't categorized as such in OSPI's internal database, according to Investigate West's review of the files. For example, a substitute teacher at the Deer Park School District, Nathan White, lost his Washington teaching license because he was arrested in Utah for trying to meet with a 13-year-old girl for sex. His misconduct was not labeled as sexual misconduct on the back end of the state's database, but instead, quote, character and fitness, a broader category that can encompass sexual misconduct. Oh, character and fitness. Yeah, I would say that trying to meet a 13-year-old girl for sex is a character and fitness problem. And then it has in these cases, so it says in this graphic, which I think is handy, each year Washington's K-12 Education Oversight Agency receives complaints from superintendents across the state regarding potential professional misconduct issues. Of the teachers added to the state's misconduct database in the last decade, 46% of them were added due to sexual misconduct. So half. Half of all teachers who are in this database for some sort of professional misconduct were there for sexual misconduct against students and other minors. So it might have been a student or it might have been a minor outside of the school. But then keep in mind, we know that some of those are being misclassified. So it has 23 for character fitness. I mean, what are the chances that all 23 of those are probably sexual misconduct? And then the other one, I just have to point this out, disregard or abandonment of standards. 109. So like a big chunk is because they're just not teaching kids, which isn't as bad as sexual misconduct, but I would argue in a different realm, it's horrible, right? Because that's literally what you're there for. So they're saying 109, was that like 30%? We're just there because they're just not doing their jobs. And then there's some for alcohol and drug abuse. Of course, remember the cocaine principal. Misrepresentation or falsification is 17. And then this is interesting. Internet/pornography is 6. Okay, so maybe abuse of the internet, but is any of that child pornography? What is it? Just watching porn at school?
Yeah, I think it's watching porn
at school.
I mean,
that should be sexual misconduct. Mm-hmm. So really, that should go up in the sexual category. And it's just absolutely disgusting. But one of the things I appreciate about this article is it calls out the teachers' unions for basically protecting all these perverts and predators. It says Dennis, the attorney with the Washington Law Center law firm, said he often sees school districts blaming the teachers' union for not allowing them to fire a teacher who displayed problematic behavior. Unions are legally required to provide fair, impartial, and good faith representation to all members following a landmark 1944 Supreme Court ruling, but Dennis sees school districts using the union as a scapegoat more often than not. Now look, I would say the union actually does have quite a bit to do with it. But he said, if there's child safety involved, that is not an acceptable excuse. Dennis said when school districts allow a teacher to quietly resign from their position without formal discipline, they are often thinking about cost savings, not student safety. Quote, they may not want to frame it that way, but at the end of the day, that's what they're doing. And it's a conscious decision that they're making, saying, hey, do we want to fight this? It's going to cost us X, Y, Z. Or do we just want to move on? Meanwhile, kids are being harmed. I got to disagree. And that's that attorney's opinion. But based on everything we've seen, I don't think that they're doing it and sweeping things under the rug for cost savings. They don't care. Why would they care? They're getting paid no matter what. It's not their money. It's the state's money. It's your money. They don't care if they have to pay out lawsuits. They're doing it to protect their own ass. They're doing it in concert with the unions to protect bad teachers and bad eggs. That's why they're doing it. Because it would look bad on them if they had a teacher preying on kids in one of their schools. That's why they're sweeping it under the rug. It has nothing to do with money. They don't care how much taxpayer money has to be paid out in lawsuits. Give me a break.
Well, I wonder if insane. It does all kind of work together, though. If they pay out, that looks bad for them. Things
yeah,
like
if,
that.
If so it's they not, lose if people find out about it, yeah. But at the end of the day, I mean, they're not going to... The school's not going to lose money over that. The individual school, the state's going to have to step in and sure. fill the void because they're not going to say, oh, now we can't teach kids because we have no money left. It's always going to be mm-hmm. recuperated. So I don't think they care about the financial aspect of it. All right. On some good news in the fight against child predators, which should be our collective goal, but not the teachers union, apparently. So we did this story on Sundays with subscribers 2 weeks ago about the city of Kennewick becoming just the latest city to have to wage a fight against these LRAs. These are less restrictive alternatives. They're being used to house these violent sex predators that are being released from McNeil Island onto unsuspecting communities who find out that a house in their neighborhood is going to be used to house people who were considered so violent and irredeemable that they were put on an island. You'll recall we had the mayor of Kennewick, Jason McShane, on the show while this was going on, and he was just beside himself with anger.
I'm number 6 out of 9 kids, and I grew up in a home where, you know, we had a very strong family background, and I was taught to you know, I was always taught to look out for those that have a hard time to look out for themselves. And so I think what I struggle with when we talk about this subject is that what we're doing is we're putting the rights of some people over the rights of those that are most vulnerable in our communities. And then we're not even going to talk about it. Right. And so I think my initial emotion is this strong feelings of protection. I'm a father. I have 5 kids. Right. I have 2 little girls. I have 3 boys. And, you know, I feel very strongly that they need to be protected. You know, I feel strong. I've gone out and I've shook hands and I've met the people that live on these streets. Some of them are they're survivors themselves. And so instead of being worried about how they feel and about what this does to them, we're so focused on getting people out of McNeil Island for a reason I still don't understand. And so the idea first that like that we're putting at jeopardy those people that are most vulnerable to us, as well as putting the rights of other people above those that have survived these heinous acts, right? Just doesn't make any sense to me. And then the idea that we're not going to talk about it, I think that's where the frustration probably boils over for me. Is I don't like it when we get in these situations where things don't make any sense, but I'm just going to tell you that that's just the way it is.
Yeah, he was really passionate about this, said he was going to do everything he could to try to stop it. But really, these cities are pretty powerless. We went through it with Tenino and Enumclaw. If the state wants to put that LRA there, the state's going to put the LRA there. But never underestimate the power of some loud-ass citizens. Love this. In Kennewick, they were fighting back against this house being used for one of these LRAs. And here's some great news. After 2 long months of standing together, we finally have incredible news. 5304 West 8th Avenue, Kennewick, is officially under contract and we're taking back our neighborhood. The owners reached out to us and said they were ready to sell and this community made it happen. We also received word from the guy who was going to open the LRA that he's left the city. We could not be prouder of how this neighborhood and community came together as one. This is what happens when people raise their voices and refuse to stay silent when it comes to the safety of our families and children. Thank you to everyone who prayed, showed up, spoke up, and supported this effort. Every single one of you played a role in making this happen. A miracle from God. Nobody messes with our children. And that's from an admin on a community page in Kennewick that was centered to this. And we have video of what is this from? A meeting?
Just a celebration. They got together and celebrated.
Love it. Let's watch. Love that. Good for them. Oh, that's great. Love to see it. And that is the power of citizens. That's what happened in Tenino when they got together and they fought back and they let people know what was going on. I mean, that's the issue, is the state does this and doesn't give anybody any opportunity for input, just says you're going to deal with this and just hopes that citizens don't find out, or if they do, they're too lazy to get involved. But they're picking the wrong cities, man, because when it comes to protecting kids, there are citizens who will stand up and raise hell. All right, we'll get to our segment Unbelievable coming up next. Do a little double dose, I think. First, I have encouraged you guys for years now to take the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always look out for your best interest. I've used First Mark for my home now for a couple years. We've also used First Mark for our business. Great option for you. And we hear from undivided viewers and listeners all the time that they have a wonderful experience with First Mark. Robin said, I joined the First Mark family. I'll be saving $100 a month. Yes, $100 a month. Thank you. Carol said, I also took the challenge and learned my current coverage was good and I should stay. True story, which is a good result as far as First Mark is concerned, making sure that they're looking out for people, even if it means turning away their business. Connie says, I'm very impressed with First Mark. I learned about them through watching Brandy on Facebook. That's me. And I was looking for a different car insurance company, so I made the call. I received an email from Chase. He was able to save me a considerable amount on my car insurance. So like so many undivided viewers and listeners, if you just want a second opinion on your insurance, maybe you're looking to save some money, reach out to First Mark. Take the First Mark challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. All right, with that, let's get to Unbelievable. All right, boop, virtue signaling gone wild. So remember a few weeks ago now when Seattle's new socialist mayor, Katie Wilson, did, as opposed to, I don't know, focusing on any of the real crises facing her city, put out all these new approaches that the city was going to have to dealing with the scourge that is ICE agents. And one of them was basically forcing SPD officers to be like mandatory reporters of ICE activity. They said, she said she was going to direct SPD to investigate, verify, and document ICE activity, mandate SPD's verified information is shared with community partners, prohibit ICE from staging operations on city property, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So basically, you've got SPD, 700 or so officers short. They can hardly respond to life or death emergencies. And the socialist mayor is saying one of their new responsibilities has to be a requirement to investigate, verify, and document ICE activity. And like, what does that even mean? A citizen says, oh, I think federal agents are here. They call 911 and now officers are mandated to respond and investigate and verify and document. I mean, I guess it's better than the Everett mayor who is telling her officers she should intervene and interfere with ICE agents. But still, I mean, as soon as this came out, I thought, first of all, I don't think it's legal. Well, it depends to what extent you get involved, but you're really going to make these officers, when they're short-staffed, overworked, working all this expensive overtime, go out and be like, what, hall monitors to monitor? Oh, yes. Well, I saw this ICE agent making an arrest. How are they doing it? And get the video and all this stuff and then report back and send it out to the community. That's absolutely insane. And now the police chief, remember when I talked about police chiefs being appointed by mayors so they just become puppets? Exhibit A. He's coming out and saying that officers will absolutely be disciplined if they don't follow those steps. Sean Barnes, this is from the Center Square. Seattle Police Chief Sean Barnes says that any police officer who violates the city's new policy requiring documentation of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement actions, including video recording, will be subject to disciplinary proceedings. He told the Seattle City Council's Select Committee on Federal Administration and Policy, this would be a violation of our policy, a violation of the law. They could be placed on administrative leave per the Seattle Police Officers Guild collective bargaining agreement. Barnes said what would happen to the officer ultimately would be based on recommendations by the City Office of Professional Accountability. He said he would offer an officer the chance to talk to him before making a final decision on any permanent discipline. Wait a second here. So you're saying a Seattle police officer would be violating the law if they don't properly document a federal agent just trying to do his job and arrest people who are literally violating the law? I mean, I had Sean Barnes' number the second I saw he had pronouns in his bio. And I've talked to people who know him who say that he has been a good cop and a good law enforcement officer. But this is what happens when you come to a city like Seattle and you serve at the pleasure of a socialist mayor. You have to make a decision. Do I bend the knee and keep my job? Or do I stay true to the oath I took and my badge and my officers? And do I stand tall and say, we're not going to be involved in this and then lose my job? I mean, to me, if you really had the best interests of your officers in mind, you would tell socialist Katie to kick rocks and you would tell her to take her job and shove it. But he's not going to do that. If he was going to do that, he would have done it by now. And I become increasingly concerned as every day goes by about the wokeification of police departments like the one in Seattle. And there's still a lot of good officers at Seattle. Obviously, I support SPD. They've really been through the ringer the last 15 years. But then you look at, like, I was watching their a post from X came up on my feed over the weekend, and it was like International Women's Day, which we'll talk about next. International Women's Day, and there was what was supposed to be a march for International Women's Day, and the Seattle Police Department put this on their official account. The speeches are just getting started, and the vibe is strong. Creative signs and friendly waves. SPD's poet stands ready to answer any questions community members may have. And it's a picture of the rally and then some of these poet officers, which is like their little unit that goes out and tries to talk with all the domestic terrorists and get them not to break things and light people on fire and hurt things. But I thought, this is okay. Even if I didn't see the pictures, regardless of what the protest is, whatever it is, this is a weird thing to post. The vibe is strong, creative signs and friendly waves. Why are you opining on speech that's happening at a protest from your official account? But then I looked closer at the picture and I zoomed in. It's the back of one of these big things. It's an anti-ICE sign. And SPD is saying the vibe is strong, creative signs. Like F ICE is a creative sign? It made me so livid. And I'm like, how embarrassing is that for the men and women of the Seattle Police Department who have want nothing to do with that nonsense? And now you're saying, like, we can trust you to enforce the law without fear or favor when you're out here, you know, all the people in there with keffiyehs who've, I'm sure there's some women who are just there for women's rights, although I guarantee not a single one of them can actually define what a woman is, because it is a march in Seattle after all. But, like, by all means, you know, a women's march isn't particularly controversial, but the who's who all showed up. You know, the pro-Hamas crowd with their keffiyehs and the anti-cop and the anti-ICE. And you've got SPD using its official platform that we pay for, by the way, run by people whose salaries we pay for, to say these signs are creative. No, it's just an F-I sign. Good God. That'll lead me into my second dose of unbelievable for the day. Gotta get two in. It's that kind of day. Speaking of International Women's Day, if you can't define a woman, you're not allowed to post anything on International Women's Day. You're just not. And if you're throwing real women and girls under the bus to placate the feelings and the fantasies of a few men who think they're women, you're also not allowed to post on International Women's Day. If I was the queen of the world, I would make that rule. Unfortunately, I'm not, and people have free will and free speech. So Governor Bob Ferguson said, "Happy International Women's Day." He is really just trolling us at this point. I mean, he's been trolling us for a while, but on this issue in particular. He says, "Washington State stands up for the rights of all women, including by protecting access to critical health care. We celebrate the role models who inspire young Washingtonians like my daughter, and we honor the generations of women who have shaped our state in countless recorded and unrecorded ways." Yes, shaped our state into a bastion for people to pretend they're women and to elect someone like you who can't define a woman. Senator Maria Cantwell, same thing. "Today on International Women's Day, we honor those who have long fought for gender equality, only to throw it away. The Save America Act," and then she talks about the Voting Act, which is totally ridiculous. But I said, look, if you're not standing up for girls and girls' safety and girls' spaces and girls' sports right now, I genuinely don't care what you have to say about International Women's Day. You can take your post and shove it. And then at this, I don't even know what to call it, because it wasn't a women's rights march. That's what they billed it as, but it was a mix of all these far left ideologies. Ari Hoffman pointed this out. International Women's Day in Seattle at Cal Anderson Park, one group led by new Seattle City Attorney Erica Evans is carrying trans flags, anti-American, anti-ICE, anti-Trump signs, and wearing Hamas keffiyehs. The other group is celebrating the potential freedom for women in Iran. So you've got literally one group with their American flags and all this stuff celebrating that these women in Iran who haven't experienced rights in years might actually be free. And then in a nation where women are free, they're saying America is horrible and awful and flying, you know, I don't know what kind of flags, all sorts of measure, trans pride flags and all this stuff. Nonsensical. Lefties in America have lost their ever-loving minds, and Seattle's new city attorney is one of them. All right, we'll get to national news, this crazy attempted bombing in New York City and how the media covered it. Absolutely wild. First, a lot happening right now with the economy globally, what's going on in Iran, oil prices, etc. So if you're concerned about any of it, all of it, maybe concerned about something else entirely when it comes to your retirement portfolio, join Bulwark Capital's Zach Abraham for his free live webinar April 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. Bulwark has a full schedule on the webinar to help you cut through the market noise, AI, crypto, tech, and the real fundamentals of value investing, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So join Zach's Cutting Through the Market Noise webinar. It's coming up April 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific, totally free. He does like four of these a year. Register now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. And if you can't make it, you can also schedule your own free Know Your Risk Portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. Oh, I'm about to talk about terrorism and my tummy's grumbling. I'm hungry. This is wild. So first of all, when all these lefties and intellectuals were chanting globalize the infatada, this is what they meant by that. Yeah, trying to blow up NYPD officers outside Gracie Mansion in New York City is what they meant by that. So all these people and privileged lefties marching around, globalize the infatada. This is what that is. is bringing terrorism right here to the streets of the United States of America. So this is from the New York Post. And can I just say, remarkable this era we're living in. Have you ever seen a terror attack captured so vividly? And it's because there was, so just to sort of set this up, there was this total right-wing nut job who was protesting outside Gracie Mansion, where the socialist mayor Mamdani lives. It's his official residence while he's the mayor. And these counter-protesters showed up. And so these people, these two terrorists, were amongst the counter-protesters, but I'm not even sure if I would even characterize them as being amongst that crowd, because they weren't trying to target this right-wing faction. They threw this homemade bomb right at NYPD officers. So this was just plain and simple an act of terrorism. From the New York Post, self-radicalized ISIS protesters used explosive called Mother of Satan inside bombs thrown at Gracie Mansion. So apparently these two were radicalized. They're two, Ibrahim Kayumi, 19, and Amar Balat, 18, both self-radicalized in recent years and traveled to Turkey and other terror training hotspots, law enforcement sources close to the case told the Washington Post. But I have to say, in the early coverage of this, Zohran Mamdani and all the media outlets made it sound like it was this right-wing faction that had tried to bomb the mayor's house. So Zohran Mamdani tweeted this. Yesterday, white supremacist Jake Lang organized a protest outside Gracie Mansion rooted in bigotry and racism. Such hate has no place in New York City. It is an affront to our city's values and the unity that defines who we are. Now, I don't mind him saying that. But when you had terrorists who threw a bomb at NYPD officers, maybe you lead with that. No, he had to lead with condemning the white supremacist, whose crime is, you know, bad speech, but he still didn't break the law. So Zohran goes on to say, what followed was even more disturbing. Violence at a protest is never acceptable. The attempt to use an explosive device and hurt others is not only criminal, it is reprehensible and the antithesis of who we are. So he's fine labeling Jake Lang as a white supremacist, bigotry, racism. But then he's like, oh, violence is never acceptable. And he doesn't call them terrorists. Doesn't call them, like, ISIS sympathizers. So, oh, white supremacist bigotry, bad speech. And then, yeah, don't use violence. That's not acceptable. And then he doesn't even clarify. So he goes on to say, I want to thank the brave men and women of the NYPD who acted quickly to keep New Yorkers safe. Brave men and women who you hate and have said horrible things about in recent years. Our officers ran toward danger without hesitation, demonstrating once again the courage and dedication it takes to protect this city. My administration is closely monitoring the situation, and I remain in close contact with our police commissioner. Anywhere in that, if you had read that from the mayor, you wouldn't know who bombed it. You would think, I mean, I would read that and think it was the white supremacists. It was the right wingers. I mean, why else would someone put a bomb outside the house where a socialist lives? Because that's without, if you don't specify, and you know there was a right-wing protest, and the bomb was, they attempted to detonate it outside the house of a socialist mayor, I think common sense would tell you it was probably the right-wingers. And the mayor knew by then. He knew that it wasn't, and the media totally complicit. I couldn't believe this. And I'll also knock the Post for saying self-radicalized ISIS protesters. Why would you call them protesters? They literally tried to bomb a protest. They tried to blow up NYPD officers. You don't get to use the title protesters anymore. The New York Post is usually better than that. The New York Times isn't, however. One of their reporters knew a counter-protester threw a homemade bomb during a violent clash with far-right protesters outside Gracie Mansion. No, they're not a counter-protester. It's a terrorist. Counter-protesters don't try to blow up people. ABC News was even worse. An activist. This is crazy. Read this. An activist holds a homemade explosive device. Oh, is that what he... Oh, it's just an activist. This is activism. No, it's a terrorist. NBC New York, multiple arrests made after suspicious devices found outside Gracie Mansion, home of Mayor Zohran Mamdani, during anti-Islam rally and counter-protest. You read that, you think the anti-Islam people
suspicious
did the bombing.
Suspicious device.
Well, it was even worse. The New York Times headline, smoking jars of metal and fuses. Smoking jars of metal and fuses. Yeah, that's it's called a bomb. In any other context, they would never hesitate to just call it what it is, a homemade explosive device. No, it's just a smoking jar of metal and fuses. Absolutely insane. The media has lost its mind. I knew it was bad, but I never thought it would get to the point where you can't just call terrorism terrorism. I mean, even like, just think back to like the Boston Marathon bombing, which was also two young men. It's like nobody hesitated to call that what it was. And had this bomb exploded, officers would have died. So why are you couching it in smoking jars of metal and fuses, activists, counter-protesters, and refusing to say what the ideology was? If Jake Lang's side had thrown a bomb at Gracie Mansion, they would have called it an act of right-wing domestic terrorism. So why don't you call this what it is? ISIS-inspired radical Islam. Terrorism. So the media has lost it. I mean, I thought after Trump won his second term, despite everything that happened with J6 and the impeachment votes and all that stuff, I thought the media would be like, yeah, we probably are responsible for that, aren't we? We should probably scale it back a little bit. No, they're just tripling down. All right. Love this from President Trump. I really believe that the Save America Act is vital to restoring faith in our elections, which hopefully will get more people off their couches to vote, but also to make sure that, look, you know, the left says that illegal aliens aren't voting. Okay, if illegal aliens aren't voting, let's just prove it. You know, require voter ID. But for whatever reason, Republicans in Congress just think because the filibuster, it's just too hard to get this through the Senate. But Donald Trump says, you send me the Save America Act or I'm not signing anything else. And not just that. On Truth Social, he said, he mentioned Scott Pressler, who we've had on the show, who has been one of the biggest voices in calling for voter ID, tried to help get a initiative qualified here in Washington State. He said, great job by hardworking Scott Pressler and Fox and Friends talking about using the filibuster or talking filibuster in order to pass the Save America Act, an 88% issue with all voters. It must be done immediately. It supersedes everything else. Must go to the front of the line. I, as president, will not sign other bills until this is passed. And not the watered down version. Go for the gold. Must show voter ID and proof of citizenship. No mail-in ballots except for military, illness, disability, or travel. No, and then he also adds, no men and women sports, no transgender mutilization. Mutilization, is that the word? For children, do not fail. So he bundles in a couple other things there, and I'm not sure where on the list those things would go, but I love all of it. I would love all of that. Now on the, I think the challenge here is going to be, he's also including the no mail-in ballots as part of the voter ID. I don't believe that the federal government can do that. And I don't believe they could just do it with this act. So let's start somewhere. Voter ID, even in mail-in voting states, when you register to vote, you have to show an ID. And then you can keep your mail-in voting and maybe somewhere down the line, all of that changes. But I think if he's going to tie those things together, this becomes exponentially more difficult and actually might have a harder time withstanding some sort of legal challenge. But if you just make it voter ID, ain't nothing in the world. The Supreme Court is never going to find against that. So I want the president to do that. Let's focus on the voter ID aspect of it, not mail-in voting for now. And of course, Democrats have their talking points. Chuck Schumer, the SAVE Act is Jim Crow 2.0. It would disenfranchise tens of millions of people. If Trump is saying he won't sign any bills until the SAVE Act is passed, then so be it. There will be total gridlock in the Senate. Senate Democrats will not help pass the SAVE Act under any circumstances. So Chuck Schumer says that requiring voter ID is Jim Crow 2.0. Let's see what old Chuck Schumer has to say about ID.
Let's admit the truth. Everywhere people go, they're asked for a Social Security card. In fact, one way to prove you're a bona fide person who can have a job is to ask for a driver's license and a Social Security card.
Oh, that's not Jim Crow 2.0? It's amazing how many, I love just the existence of the internet. It's amazing how many things they stand for today or stand against today that they were totally opposite on 20 years ago. And I'm fine with people changing their mind. But admit you're changing your mind and articulate the specific reasons why your mind has changed. I mean, that girls' sports issue, Patty Murray back in 2003. Oh my gosh, we've got to protect girls' sports. Not anymore. Dudes can participate. Just ridiculous. No moral consistency from anyone. All right, we'll get to our subscriber show poll, comments from the live stream coming up next. First, March, spring is fully underway. Although it's spring this morning, I had snow at my house. which was so nice. Lucky loved it. She went
I
out
saw there that just, there was snow out there. I was a little jealous.
Yes. No, I mean, it wasn't a lot, but it was nice. But other than that, it has been raining down a storm for days and days on end. So March is the start of spring. And with spring, everybody's thinking about gardening and all these things. And your list of outdoor to-dos grows exponentially. Fortunately, Valentine Roofing is here to help you with that to-do list. They got my back. They got your back when it comes to checking off exterior maintenance jobs. And with Valentine's huge March promotion, they're not only going to take care of you this year, but they got next year covered too. So this month only, get your free year of roof maintenance when you purchase a new roof. Then enjoy seasonal checkups and professional care to keep your new roof looking its best. Plus, they have flexible financing options with payments as low as $159 a month. So a Valentine roof is a roof built around your budget. So call 206 Roofing to schedule your free estimate today. 206 Roofing, and I know you're going to be in good hands because they were voted 2025 Gold Best Roofing Company in the Seattle Times Best in the Pacific Northwest. So they get all sorts of awards, excellent customer service. As always, so 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. Tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right, let's get to our... Oh, before I get to this, don't panic. I know you don't like change. You'll notice if you're a subscriber on Patreon that the layout of our Patreon page has changed. And I think it's a positive change. Helps you find things, more adjustments. So I'm sure I'm going to have all sorts of messages like, Brandy, what's happening on Patreon? It's a positive change. Much more easy to navigate the site. I think it looks much better too. So don't panic. Just take some time to get used to it. But subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, I asked you this question in our daily subscriber show poll. Do you believe parents have a right to know whether a teacher or staff member in their child's school is accused of sexual misconduct? Yes, always, or only if substantiated by an investigation. Nicole, so do they have a right to know, or do we have to wait until an investigation determines that, yeah, that's legitimate?
That's really hard. I don't know, because sometimes I think that, you know, it's used, you know, it could be a weapon if used in the wrong hands, right? Or put in the wrong hands. So I would guess substantiated by an investigation. However, that often gets hidden from us, right? So that's the point, right? I guess that.
Well, they're always like, well, we can't comment. That's a personnel matter.
It's a personnel matter. Or if they resign, that article that we featured earlier in the show, if they relinquish their teaching license on their own, then they don't have to tell us anything about the investigation.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I don't like that at all.
So I'm going to say yes always, only because I'm not saying you need to tell me the teacher's name, but at least send out, like, this teacher's on leave, you know, we're investigating and we'll follow up with more information, but we want to let you know, like, if it's a kid, you know, if it's your child's teacher, you're going to know who it is, right? Sure. But like, there's a teacher in the school or whatever it is. So I think you have to tell parents something, because if they find out later, they're going to be angry, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. And as you said, they'll do these investigations. It'll last 2 years, and then it'll be like, might as well not tell anybody because those kids aren't even in the school anymore. It's like, no, you have a right to know, because then parents should be able to talk to their kid and say, hey, especially if you had an interaction with this teacher, has he ever, you know, made you uncomfortable or anything?
Or has there been any teacher?
Right, 100%. 86% of you are saying yes, always. Slick the Victoria, I said yes, and of course, I think you should be proven guilty in a court of law, but at the same time, I'm tired of reading about a teacher that was suspected or accusations were brought forward that ended up at another school or is still working around kids. Yeah, and that's a good point, too, is like, you know, are these things tracking? Are these following these teachers, or can they just go to a different place and do it all over again? Ham fam, as a child of public school teachers, I saw multiple times accusations made against teachers that resulted in nothing. It was just malicious. If the police get involved, then certainly, but there should always be a clear and loud message of innocent until proven guilty. And I totally understand that perspective as well, that innocent until proven guilty, call police in, let police do their job, etc. But should you tell parents that something is going on? Vic says, yes, of course. Lolly says they shouldn't be in a classroom, at least while the investigation happens. Pat says, why do you think they're pushing for students to not have phones in class? They must be public knowledge teachers. What happened with mandatory reporters registering as sexual predators? Why? Yes, 1,000%. I'm sorry. That is one of the crimes that I will not be okay with teachers being around my kids. before they're convicted. So saying that's like one of the crimes that you want to know about even before they're proven guilty in a court of law. And I could totally understand that. All right, some comments from the live stream. So in case you joined us late, our show started an hour early today because I'm heading down to federal court in Tacoma, and I actually got to get on the road fairly soon because our free press pass lawsuit is being heard by a judge on an emergency basis. Nicole, are you coming to join us? Yeah. Chuck says, good luck in court this afternoon. We stand behind you. May common sense win the day. I mean, it would really be something for a federal judge to say that the state gets to rewrite basically who's covered by the First Amendment and freedom of the press. But I've been surprised before. I know. I've been very surprised before. The one thing I could say is the judge says, oh, it's not an emergency to do this. Let it go to court. Because they're not deciding on the case today, really on the merits per se,
right,
on whether it constitutes an emergency to sort of force the state's hands. I think it does. Dave says, may the force be with you and your crew. Thank you. Country Guy, by their definition, NPR shouldn't get a press pass. Yeah, it's like, okay, so the Seattle Times gets to pretend to be neutral and then publish blatant lies like we exposed them for earlier this week. And I tell the truth, but I couch it in my opinion. Literally, which of those is worse?
I know. I mean, your attorney can take a bunch of statements from different outlets and say, what about this? What about this? What about this?
Tricky when the government decides what's press and what isn't. Yep. That's not how America is supposed to be. Megan said, I don't know how you can say you aren't a journalist or how anyone else can claim you aren't a journalist. You're the best damn journalist there is in my eyes. Well, I appreciate that. And I guess I'm less adverse to that title because that's what I've been for such a long time. And it's funny because like Jonathan Cho, the state
more
says,
than one thing.
Right. That's what I'm saying is that they're literally quoting me in their document saying she says she's not a journalist. Right. But that doesn't mean I'm not a member of the press. You understand? You could be a member of the press, but not be a journalist in the sense of that word. But yeah, I mean, we do a lot of journalism on the show. I mean, we do as much due diligence on our stories. We break stories all the time, but predominantly, I'm a political commentator. And Bob, all ready to sign the income tax. Thomas says, Supreme Court has already stated any law passed that is repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. Well, we'll see where this one goes. Hermit Camper, this crazy business module they're using is trying to solve the problem from the wrong end. On the bill allowing sheriffs to be removed, heading to Bob's desk for a signature, Guy's Keeper says, sheriff is the most powerful law enforcement you meet in normal life. Now they'll turn into a political ring kisser. Let's hope not. That's Dawn, crazy. This is massive government overreach not seen since the revolution. That's what I mean is like, I'm sorry. Our country was birthed on less. Let's be honest about it was birthed on less. And I wouldn't put these people past like using lethal force. What genuinely? What happens if they take Keith Swank's certification and they say you're no longer the sheriff? Who's going to go in and get him? How is that going to go down? I have thought about that a lot over the weekend because I don't think he's going quietly into the night. Right. I'm not saying he's going to do something violent, but he's not going to leave until they physically remove him from that office by force.
And who's taking his spot?
Right. And who gets to choose? It's insane. I mean, they'd have to have some sort of snap election. But
I mean, I wouldn't want to be that person.
Right. I mean, it's absolutely wild. Let's see. On Mom Donnie downplaying the NYPD bombing, Old School says, why did I say bombing like that?
Mommy.
It's a bombing. Old School. They may as well have said fragrant. They may as well have said fragrant candle. Yes. Wait a second. Fragrant That's candle. Really funny because the New York Times headline, smoking jar of metal infuses. Yeah, they might have said, I'm suspected to be a Yankee candle. I mean, that headline describes like a candle.
Oh, yeah.
That's really funny. That like might be my incense. Favorite comment of the year so far. Leland Taylor, the implication he was going for is that the protesters are the ones who threw the IED when in fact it was the jihadists. Yes. And we'll end with Doug. Mom Donnie is just flexing his muscles of misinformation. Typical socialist.
It's really shocking how much information he gives out that's just not accurate, really.
He's doing it intentionally. I mean, he became mayor off of a total, like, fictitious personhood. I mean, he had no experience. I mean, he just built himself up as this, like, interesting, worthy, credible person. And he was, like, a rapper.
Yeah, he was
in
just
his mommy's basement. I mean, it's just crazy. Anyway.
The snowballs thing when there's literal proof. Here's proof.
They were throwing chunks of ice. Oh, it was kids throwing snowballs at cops. No, it was adults throwing sheets of ice. Thank you, sir. Worst. Okay, Nicole, thank you.
Yeah.
Before we get to our closing sanity check, which gave me a good strong, hearty laugh. If you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, RHAWA.org, or if you're just interested in housing policy, because they have events all across the state where they get together, talk about housing policy in the state of Washington. And that a lot is included in that. It's not just people who have rental units, but also like who, you know, have full-time tenants. But let's say you have Airbnb, you have a unit you want to use on Airbnb a few months out of the year, or you use Airbnbs as a family often, and there was an effort to increase fees on Airbnbs in Olympia this year, that would impact you. And RHA is down there fighting against policies like that. So housing policy has a bunch of different tentacles and people who are interested in it. So you could be a member of RHA too. Go to RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. It is Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I love this. So Real Time with Bill Maher, he's like one of the only sane Democrats. He has his moments. But he was talking about the war in Iran and President Trump's, and is it even a war yet? I don't know. People throw around that phrase. Is it a targeted military action? Whatever it is. But he had on, who was it again? Sorry, he had on Schiff, Shifty Schiff. And he was asking him about the president's decision and his authority to make a decision like that. And he read a quote to Adam Schiff from the administration.
This statement from the administration: the president had the constitutional authority to direct the use of military force because he could reasonably determine that such use of force was in the national interest. That's too vague for you?
Totally vague.
Okay, because that's from Obama about Libya.
It was a quote from Obama about Libya. Oh, that's totally too vague. Oh, really? Because it's not Trump. Obama said that. Genius. Gotta love it. That has been our closing sanity check. I'll fill you guys in, keep you up to date on what happens in court, hoping for the best. I will immediately go down to Olympia and use that newfound press pass to cover the income tax vote if it were to happen tonight. We'll be back to our normal scheduled time, noon tomorrow, so we'll see you then. If you have not signed up to become a subscriber, that's how our show is possible. You hate the legacy news, think they're doing a horrible job. Well, you guys, this is the alternative, and don't we have fun? Don't we have fun?
We do.
We do have fun. Who has more fun than us, really?
I don't know.
Show me the person having more fun. Because we have to. Because if not, we'd just be in a deep depression every day. So we must make it fun. So you can sign up. It's just $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. What else? I think that's it. We'll see you back here tomorrow, noon. Go sign up. Hit like, share. Follow us across social media platforms. Go post some nasty comment on a Seattle Times article. Do your job. Pitch in. Okay, bye.